Will, you remember Jay Lambert, the firearms instructor at the academy?
No. Goes by Jillian now.
What? The perm? Perm's a man?
Yes, sir.
You're a kind of girl, Vera.
She's better looking.
Oh, say, can you see in the blinkless electron gun eye of the mainstream media mirage that what we hail are the hallucinations of authority and progress and righteousness, whose sweet and stern voices have captivated and conditioned millions of human creatures, stimulated them in passive acceptance of technological disruption and destruction of our environments, of our histories, of the possibilities of alternative ways of being, whose seven stripes are broken swastikas, whose 50 stars are black holes sucking 200 million atomized existences into the daily routine of the human herd of hamsters, rolling the great wheels of the death machine, squeaking at the shocks and nibbling the cheese, and reciting and discussing and delighting in their mutually shared programming history, in their lives, and their cancers, their TV shows, their deaths, their jobs, their ignorance, their endless, pointless, forward creeping, their glorious glide nosedive into their paycheck's pleasures, into an ecstatic emptiness, a glowing incinerator, a parking lot full of businessmen conspiring and colluding on the big dream, the big lie, the big nauseating, screaming, sweating nightmare of business America, media America, corporate America, consumer America, fascist America.
I am Katrina Rose. I'm an attorney, and I'm a transgender legal historian. I'm also someone who actually cares about whether or not transsexual and transgender rights continue to exist in 2006 and beyond. As such, I'd much rather be a trans flake than a trans fake. Yes, welcome to I'd Rather Be a Trans Flake Than a Trans Fake on the Trans FM Radio Network, as well as Podomatic and iTunes. I'd Rather Be a Trans Flake Than a Trans Fake, hosted by Katrina Rose. Brought to you this week by Hypocrisy. New Jersey Civil Union Bill passes through another legislative committee despite growing public support for marriage. Lambda Legal says legislature is rushing to the wrong side of history. There's a press release on the Lambda Legal website, dated December 11th. At the conclusion of the New Jersey Senate Judiciary Committee hearing today on Senate Bill S-2407, a civil union bill, the members voted to send the measure to the full Senate for a floor vote. Lambda Legal, the organization representing plaintiffs in a lawsuit which resulted in the New Jersey Supreme Court decision in October, said the measure is moving too fast for justice to prevail. I want you all to think about that. They're complaining about it moving too fast for justice to prevail. Quote, the latest Quinnipiac poll showed that more New Jerseyans favor marriage equality than in earlier polling, closing in on 50%, and now the New Jersey State Bar Association has voted to oppose the civil union bill and support the marriage equality bill, said David Bakel, marriage project coordinator at Lambda Legal, and lead attorney on the New Jersey marriage lawsuit. Quote, each day that goes by, more people favor equality and justice. The legislature is not taking the time it needs to consider this issue. It is rushing to the wrong side of history. The Judiciary Committee today did not even listen to any testimony from couples whose lives will be directly affected by the outcome of their vote. With this, I have to ask a question. Did David Bakel, or anyone now or at the time connected with Lambda Legal, make the same comment about the bill which became New Jersey's gay-only rights statute 15 fucking years ago? Now, I know you're saying,
But Kat, you know, there was that Enriquez versus West Jersey Health Systems case, you know, like 5 years ago, which said transgendered people are covered under sex and disability.
So? Find us in the statute. Find us on the posters that are in every employer that people see, employers and employees see, in the employment context. Do employers know about that? I've said this a zillion times. Lawyers know it. Failure to hire suits are the most impossible to win. Not impossible, but the most impossible. It can be done. You gotta have a hell of a lot of luck. Usually a smoking gun. Trannies tend not to find smoking guns. They tend to be on the short end of them. In its October decision, the New Jersey Supreme Court unanimously found that same-sex couples in New Jersey must have equal protection under the law and be granted the rights and responsibilities of marriage, but gave the legislature the opportunity to correct the violation. If the legislature chose civil unions over marriage, the court left open the question of whether or not that choice would be constitutional, reasoning that the legislature should have the chance to explain its decision. The court's deadline expires on April 23rd of 07. Garden State Equality organized a wide array of people to provide testimony opposing the civil union bill. Now, I know there are some transgender people involved with Garden State Equality. So, and not to kind of confuse anything I've said already, but to make it clear, yes, the gay marriage civil union thing is obviously the top priority, and it is appearing as though the gender identity bill is actually happening and is actually moving forward. Will this be an instance where gender identity goes through while people are paying attention to gay marriage? It's looking as though it might. If so, it's really going to be the first time ever. The criticisms I've just talked about, though, are still valid in terms of historical developments. For a full decade, we were fucked in New Jersey in terms of civil rights law. For 5 years after that, right up until now, there's a court decision that doesn't really help a whole hell of a lot of people. It's nice for legal academics like myself to write about, but I just don't think it would help me all that much if I was actually looking for a job in New Jersey. We'll see, though. I've got my hopes up that things will work out, because, even though I was incredibly cynical about the Lewis versus Harris case when it first started, because I was very pissed off that they, again, you know, decided gay marriage was the top priority, it was very cynical, very angry, that basically we were being fucked again. You know, it is New Jersey. You know, if the standard bullshit was not going to play out, this was probably a place where that would occur, where the standard bullshit wouldn't work according to form, transgender people wouldn't get completely fucked. I'll be honest, I thought we were going to get fucked by the Lewis versus Harris Supreme Court decision, no matter which way it went. Didn't happen that way. We kind of did in the appellate division, the intermediate appellate court, the dissenting opinion, which was the one for gay marriage. Had some really snotty, snarky, shitty things to say about transsexuals. Not overtly, but just read how the guy phrased his analysis of the 1976 MT versus JT case. Just wasn't exactly pro-transsexual. And much to my surprise, we simply weren't talked about in the Supreme Court decision. But on the horizon right now, looks as though New Jersey might join California and Rhode Island among the states that have gone back and rectified legislative hate crimes that were committed against transsexuals, namely gay-only laws. Hasn't happened yet, but looks as though it might. Still, the whining about separate but equal that you're hearing from the gay rightsoids about the having to settle for civil unions instead of gay marriage is at best hypocrisy. They didn't care when a gay rights law was passed that was separate but equal in favor of gays against transgendered people. Sorry, that's the historical record. Deal with it. Next up, something a little bit more positive. It's going to be a rather long piece, pretty much take up the rest of the program. It's a recording of majority of a presentation given in my transgender history class at the University of Iowa back in November. There's a guest speaker. Her name is Cindy Burke, and if you're familiar at all with the development of the trans inclusivity of the Iowa City Civil Rights Ordinance, which had a similar development span as, or development gap span, like New Jersey. 1977, Iowa City passed a gay only ordinance. 1995, almost two decades later, it added gender identity and expression to the ordinance. One of the people at the center of Iowa City making that change in 1995 was just an average, ordinary male-to-female transsexual. Not a lawyer type or an academic type, just someone who was directly affected by the non-inclusivity of the ordinance. And it's kind of self-explanatory. Later, towards the end of the piece, as to how I came to have her do a presentation in my class. It was really just total complete luck. But I thought she does a decent job of talking about her experiences, not just with the process of getting the ordinance updated, but some personal experiences of life as transsexual in the Midwest. So hopefully this will be interesting. And again, it's going to pretty much take up the rest of the program. But this was recorded November 10th, 2006, in my afternoon section of Gender Variance Through the Ages at the University of Iowa.
While I'm doing this, I can go ahead and introduce the guest speaker for today. Hopefully everybody did read the stuff that was on the syllabus for today, deals with, a particular moment in Iowa City's history, which a couple of different things were going on at the time, one of which involved a professor here at the University of Iowa, who's no longer a professor here, but not because of her transition. She left on her own later. The other involved the updating of the Iowa City Human Rights Ordinance to include discrimination against transgendered people. And there were a number of people and situations that kind of came together to make that happen. But one of the people is here in class today. Just by chance, I had seen the articles about this quite some time ago, and I used them in my class last semester, and after the class, one of my students came up to me and said, "Hey, the person you talked about in class, I know her." And we got put in contact, and she practically begged to come tell her story. I don't know if that's the way to phrase it, but she certainly volunteered. Volunteered to come tell her story about the heady days of 1995 here in Iowa City and the updating of the Human Rights Ordinance. So for everybody who made it out on this dreary day, do give her a hand. This is Cindy Burke.
I'm going to move the furniture.
Move whatever you want.
Hello.
As Katrina said, I'm Cindy Burke, and I have to tell you how surreal it is to be sitting in class at the University of Iowa and the instructor is talking about me. When I was your age, I never dreamed that would be an aspect of my life, and a good aspect. I started living as a woman in 95, started hormones in February, started living full-time in May, and as this was transitioning was going on, I needed some extra money, and there was a company right next to my apartment building where you could go and get blood. They're still there. It's a different company running it now, but they're still there. And so I called up ahead of time because I was on the antidepressants, and I'm thinking, well, if they're taking your blood and giving it to other people and you're on antidepressants, that might not be a good idea. And I wanted to make sure that that wouldn't preclude me from being a donor. So I called up, and I posed the question, and she asked what medications I was on, and I said the one I was on, the antidepressant, and she said, are there any others? And I said, well, I take Premarin and progesterone, which are female hormones. And she goes, well, why do you take those? And I told her that I was transitioning to be a woman. And she paused for a second, and she said to me, she goes, well, then you would not be allowed to be a donor. And I'm like, well, why? Because, I mean, women donate, and they got these hormones in their blood. Why would that make a difference? And she goes, well, we don't allow donors that are same, that have same-sex partners. And, I didn't know how she got from me transitioning to be a woman to me having a same-sex partner. Because, believe me, in my life, never has had the idea of sleeping with a guy ever come up. So, I tried to explain it, and she said to me, she goes, well, transsexuals are really just men that dress as women so they can have sex with other men. And it was one of the most devastating moments of my life. I never felt discrimination before. Growing up as a white Anglo-Saxon male in the Chicago suburbs, there's not a lot of cause for discrimination. And so it hurt a lot. And I knew it was wrong. So I called a friend of mine, Jeanette, who works for Legal Aid, and I told her about it, and I said, what can I do? And she said, well, they have a very comprehensive civil rights ordinance here in Iowa City. Contact the Human Rights Coordinator and make a complaint. So I did that, and I talked to Heather Shank, who's just recently retired as a Human Rights Coordinator, and I filled out a complaint. She took all the background information and proceeded to do this process. And she called me a couple weeks later and she told me that due to rulings by Iowa courts, transsexuals have to be covered specifically or they're not covered at all. They're not covered under sexual identity, they're not covered under any other category. They have to have their own category. So legally, they could discriminate against me on that basis. And then she recommended that I go before the city council and offer or ask them to amend the ordinance to include transsexuals. Well, in between the time that this stuff with Saratech came up and when I actually went before the city council, I had stopped presenting. For the spring of 95, at night I would go out dressed as a woman, avoid everybody, you know, just walk around, and if somebody were coming down the sidewalk toward me, I'd walk to the other side of the street, because I was sure that people were going to stop me and ridicule me. And so I just avoided people, and then during the day I'd dress as a guy with kind of femmy hair, and, you know, it's Iowa City, you can get away with just about anything here. So, on May 10th, a friend of mine restyled my hair and did my makeup, and I'm looking in the mirror and I'm like, I can no longer get away with living as a guy. So from this point on, I'm going to live as a woman. And I have. 11 years, 5 months, a few days. So when I went before the city council in June, I'd only been living as a woman full time for about 3 weeks. And it was scary. And I looked like a spinster school teacher. I had this long pleated skirt on and this georgette blouse with a high frilly collar and frill around my... And I did. I looked like some spinster school teacher. I'd written out, because I learned in school, you know, if you're going to make a presentation, you write it all out ahead of time. And I wrote it out, and as I'm sitting there waiting to talk, it just didn't ring true. So when it came time to talk, I just got up and I went up there and I winged it. And just told them who I was and why I was there and what I wanted them to do. And I called a couple days before that. I looked up. We used to have a city councilwoman here in Iowa City, Karen Covey. Her big claim to fame was she was a socialist and she got elected to the city council. Her name was in the phone book. So I called her up, told her who I was, what I wanted to do, and asked her if she thought it would work. And she was very receptive, and she said, I'll give you all the support I can, and if you get scared when you're at the city council meeting, just look at me and I'll get you through it. So I show up, I go up there, and I started talking about why I was there. And the funny thing is that when you speak from your heart, as I did that day, you don't remember what you say. Like I did, I talked to another of Katrina's classes an hour ago, and I couldn't tell you what I said. And I just don't know. So I didn't know what I said to the city council. Last year I decided to write an article about my 10-year reunion as living as a woman and getting there to Human Rights Awareness amended. And I actually got a transcript, which right here. I read what I'd said to the city council, and I have to say it was my finest hour. Because, I mean, I cannot read that now without getting all emotional. It touches me, and it touched the city council members. Karen told me afterwards, she said, your honesty was just what sold it. So we went through the process. They recommended, or they referred it to the Human Rights Commission, and we had a few meetings, and they wanted to just add a subsection under sexual identity for to cover transgendered people. And I had a big problem with that. Not because I have any kind of a legal mind or anything like that. It's just that, to me, sexual orientation is who you sleep with. And, you know, and that's what that is. And who I sleep with is nobody's business. It's got nothing to do with who I am. Whereas gender identity is all about who I am. So I didn't think that was right. And I made that known. And eventually, they ended up having a standalone amendment, which I've been told is why it had such a big impact, because it was a standalone amendment and not just the subsection of some other part of the ordinance. They passed it on November 11th. No, November 10th. I'm thinking.
Let's
Well, you know more about this than I do.
I don't remember the exact date.
But it was in November of 95 that I watched. The weather was just incredible. I wanted to go to the to the city council meeting for the third vote because I wanted to be there. Because I thought they were doing this for me. You know, I didn't think they were doing it for anybody else. I asked them real nicely, and so they gave me what I wanted. That's the kind of city Iowa City is, you know. They'll kind of pat you on the head and say, you're a good girl, go ahead. But the weather was atrocious, so I watched it on cable. And it really did. To me, it was like an act of love from the city council. It's like, okay, you're a little weird. We don't get you at all, but hey, you're one of us. I've since come to find out that on the local level, in the last 10 years, see, the funny thing about discrimination is people can discriminate against me, and it's real easy, and they don't necessarily have to break the law to do it. You know, just be a little smart about it. Like, if I'm applying for a job, and you don't want to hire me because I'm a transsexual, well, you tell me about your experiences and what we're looking for, or, you know, any number of reasons. They don't have to say, well, no, we don't want somebody like you working here. And that would be fully within the bounds of the law. So I always thought it'd be take somebody really stupid to violate that ordinance. And in 10 times in the last 10 years, there have been people that are stupid enough to violate that ordinance. So that, I didn't expect that. I didn't think it would have an impact at all. But it has. Another thing that's come up is it really garnered a lot of national attention. Because at the time, and you can correct me if I'm wrong on this, I'm a little fuzzy on the details. Let me preach for a little bit. Don't smoke too much marijuana, you'll forget what the hell goes on in your life. At the time,
don't forget the legal ramifications, there's always that. So.
Yeah. I'm thinking Minneapolis was the only municipality that prohibited discrimination against transsexuals.
By 95, only one state did. A number of cities did. Minneapolis, I was going to give kind of a pop quiz, you know, just kind of oral, but yeah, Minneapolis, we've learned a lot about what happened in Minneapolis and Minnesota. A couple other cities did, too. Actually, Los Angeles by that point did, too.
But not a lot.
Not a lot of them.
No. And not the ones you'd think.
San Francisco had just done it, like in 94.
Yeah.
But that was like 15 years after it did its sexual orientation ordinance. And again, Iowa City, you know, is very different than Minneapolis. We've learned about Minneapolis. You know, there was a big row between the trans activists and the gay activists there in 1975. They passed a sexual orientation ordinance in 74. Big row when they tried to do the same thing at the state level. By the end of 75, they pretty much took care of things. It took a while for the state to actually pass one, but in the city, things were taken care of in 75. Iowa City passed its sexual orientation ordinance in 77, and took about 18 years for someone to stand up and say, hey, do something about this.
Another thing that happened that I didn't know was going to happen. There was in 95, there's a great play called Angels in America, and it was done on HBO a couple years ago, and it's incredible. And if you ever got 6 hours you want to kill, I recommend that. It's about AIDS, and it's an incredible play. And they were coming to Iowa City, and I remember in the DI, in the 80-hour section on Thursday, they had this picture of this woman with these incredibly huge feathered wings as an angel hanging in thin air. And I met that woman at a Salvation Army store that used to be on Gilbert Court, where Crowded Closet is now. And I was looking at her because she had like salt and pepper hair, and she had these like two little points right here that looked like owl, like she looked like an owl. And I was fascinated with that, and she was fascinated with me for whatever reason. So she came over, she introduced herself, and she was the angel in Angels in America. She asked if I was going to the play, and I said, well, no, I really can't afford to go to anything at Hancher Auditorium. And she said, well, it would mean a lot to us to have somebody in the audience that understands this, because so far nobody has. So if I bought your ticket, would you go? Well, of course, you know. And I got a great ticket, a third row center, and I'm down there with all the hoi polloi, and I'm all duped out and everything, and I'm all... afterwards, I went backstage and meet up with Carolyn, and there was this African-American actor, Reggie, about 6'10", 6'11", and the gayest man I've ever met in my life. And Reggie had picked up a magazine in San Francisco, and in this magazine was an article about me and the Iowa City Human Rights Ordinance. And so Reggie's big thing coming to Iowa City was he wanted to meet me. And when I found that out, I mean, my life in the years preceding Cindy, there's not a lot that... Nobody's coming looking for me. Or if they are, it's because I owe them money. Or I did them wrong. Or screwed them out of something, you know? Nobody's looking for me because I'm this fine, upstanding individual. So that was big for me, you know, that this man, the one thing he wanted to do was, in coming to Iowa City, was to meet me. And the fact that they thought enough about this to put it in a magazine in San Francisco was way cool, too. In 96, some friends of mine went to the Chicago Pride Parade, and a transgender group in Chicago, their float in the Pride Parade was a tribute to me. And I didn't see it, but I heard about it. And again, you know, I didn't go to the city council and ask them to amend the human rights ordinance because I'm a big activist. I did it because what happened really hurt a lot. And I really thought that amending the human rights ordinance to prohibit that from happening to anybody else was the right thing to do. And it was very personal, and I didn't do it to become famous, and I didn't do it because I'm altruistic. I just did it because it was right. And I thought, I really did, I thought the only reason that they did it was because they wanted, you know, okay, we'll do this for you and then just leave us alone. I've come to realize that Iowa City's not that way. They did it because it was the right thing to do, and that they do want their human rights ordinance to cover everybody. I get what I like to refer to as unsolicited testimonials, to where complete strangers come up to me and say the most incredible things. You know, from, you're just so powerful, and you're so beautiful, and keep it up. And I had one woman, she had her two little sons with her, and she goes, I want to thank you for making Iowa City a better place for my sons to grow up. And I don't know who she is. She just walked up to me on the pen mall one day. It's very touching. You know, I didn't do it for fame. I didn't do it to change the world. I just did it because it seemed that it would probably not, I wouldn't feel as bad about what happened. Because if you've ever been discriminated against, you know, that's like a punch in the gut. I mean, just kind of throws you for a loop. We haggled over the language for a bit. They did 3 readings, and on a cold night in November, they passed it. And now, there's a lot of other cities, because of the coverage given Iowa City's amendment, that within a short period of time passed similar amendments for their human rights ordinance. Again, I don't know how successful they are, but it's nice, it's almost like society as a whole saying, okay, you're a little different than the rest of us, but you're still one of us. And so, it's nice to be accepted. It really is.
You're thinking? Okay.
I'm thinking that's about, as far as what I mean, that really, there wasn't a lot to it. It is a big deal. It really is. And if you ever find out that there is loopholes, get them closed. Because nobody but nobody deserves to be discriminated against for any reason whatsoever. I'm thinking that we've plugged a big hole in this one. Because I'm sure Katrina's gone over the difference between transgendered and transsexuals and transvestites and any other myriad of subcategories under transgendered. But it does. It includes a lot more people that weren't included before. And the amazing thing is that of the 10 cases that they filed through a human rights coordinator, all 10 of them have been female-to-male transsexuals. I got that little bit of information from Heather.
In what time period? I know one male-to-female who has.
Really?
Yeah.
Well, then
what,
I didn't hear about that.
What time period?
Between the passage of it and when I asked her about it. She told me that at least 10 times, and they were female to male.
What did you say? Those were the only ones, or were the had
I
there
don't
been
know.
10?
You know,
10 female to male. Okay, so when we first talked, I told you that I only knew one person who had ever filed a complaint under the ordinance, and she was not pleased at the outcome of it, and it was no female. But I don't know if she had a particular time period she was talking about or not.
All I know is that it works. And I'm real happy, you know. Again, I didn't do it for any other reason than it just seemed like the way to do it.
And just to kind of clarify what the historical development, originally when after you testified and when they first decided, yeah, this is something that needs to be done, that's the language they first proposed, which was kind of modeled after what had happened in Minnesota. Not just the Minneapolis ordinance, but also the state law, where all the transgender stuff is covered as kind of an addition to the standard language for sexual orientation. I mean, that's an okay way to do it, but there's obviously two ways of thinking regarding gender identity being part of sexual orientation or being apart from it. A totally separate problem was the precise wording that they came up with here. That's not the precise wording from Minnesota. The wording they had here, sexual orientation includes actual or perceived male or female homosexuality, heterosexuality, or heterosexuality, bisexuality, homosexuality. That's kind of your standard definition of sexual orientation. Then they simply added transsexuality or transvestism and includes a person's attitudes, preferences, beliefs, and practices pertaining thereto. Those last three words, that's enough to make you hate any lawyer. But, you know, it's a practices pertaining there, too. But the more substantive problem is the only trans stuff specifically that they added, transsexuality, transvestism. And you know, some of the articles that, you know, were published in the local papers, you know, a number of people, including a guy named Brett Beeman, who was a TA here at the time, he's now working at the Gay, Lesbian, Bi, Trans Center, I think at Yale. At University of Massachusetts, Northeast, but different university. He, among other people, pointed out, you know, that doesn't cover all trans stuff. It covered your situation, but not everybody's. So ultimately, they came up with the separate, the standalone gender identity category, which pretty much does cover everything.
Well, I'm kind of wishing whoever it was that came up with the word transsexual, I don't know what word they could have used, but I'm thinking adding that sexual in, because, I mean, the fact that I'm Cindy Burke is so not anything to do with sexuality. So having that word at the end of it kind of gives people the wrong idea, I think. You know, like that nurse at Serotec Biologicals. And people, you know, I think that it gives, I think it gives it a bad aspect. And, you know, We were talking at lunch. You wouldn't think that becoming, that transforming into a woman would be a possible death sentence. But it is.
Well, it can be.
It can be. Yeah. Well, yeah.
There are people who would like to see the death sentence carried out. So
yeah. My own, in early 96, it had to have been late 95, I was coming home from this club, and I'd taken a cab home, and I didn't get my keys out to let myself into my building. And I'm in the parking lot off the alley behind the building, and I get out of the cab, and it's Thanksgiving weekend, so my building is all college students. There was nobody home. So I'm standing at this car, and I'm digging through my purse for my keys, and all of a sudden, there was a knife right across my throat. A big knife. I mean, and I'm sure that it looked a lot bigger at the time, but it was a big knife. And it was two guys, and they knew my name. And they proceeded to force me into the bushes and rape me. And over the ensuing 5 months after that, Mr. Knife Wielder tried to kill me a couple of times, would call me on an average of 10 times a day, and just leave the most incredibly vile messages in my voicemail. The cops had my phone tapped to try and catch him, but he only used payphones, so they couldn't catch him that way. The cops were following me every time I left my house. They couldn't catch him. He just seemed to be in all the places where I was vulnerable. And then one day he just disappeared. And there's a story behind that, but we won't go into it.
If you want to, you can go, because it doesn't potentially defame anybody.
There used to be a provost here named Rusty Barcelos. Rusty Barcelos claimed to fame, besides being an incredible woman and a great college administrator, Rusty was the first out lesbian at the University of Iowa. As a student, as an instructor, she came from Mexico, she figured out she was gay, and she decided she was going to be out there gay. And so she left the University of Iowa to go to the University of Minnesota, and they had a little going away thing for her, and I got invited. And so I was telling Rusty about this guy, because I mean, this guy was, he wanted me dead, and it scared me. And I'm ready to like move, you know? And she said to me, she goes, "You can't. You gotta trust the community to keep you safe, and you gotta stand up for them. You have to." And yeah, you know, and she was right. You know, I could, running away was really not an option. So she said, "Just trust that you'll be okay. There's people that are watching out for you, and nothing's going to happen to you." So, you know, if the calls go on, I had a feeling somebody was following me from time to time, but I really couldn't say for sure. Just a feeling I had. And then spring break came, and the phone calls just stopped. And I'm thinking, I mean, I was so certain this guy was a college student. You know, he had like Rockport shoes on and Dockers and not sure. And his hate messages were very, he was real good at it. You know, it wasn't like some redneck idiot talking. This guy was educated and was just a scary kind of hate. And they just stopped. And a couple of weeks later, I'm in the 620 Club, and they had this stall in the women's bathroom that you could live in. I mean, it was huge. And I'm in there, and I got my, you know, skirt pulled up, and I'm peeing. And these two immense, very butch women come right into the stall. And the one said, "Are you Cindy Burke?" And I said, "Well, yes, I am." And she goes, "Some guy's been bothering you." And I said, "Yes, he is." And she goes, "Well, he won't be bothering you anymore." And I go, "Well, what happened?" And she goes, "Well, you don't need to know that." And I never heard another word from him. But then about 3 years ago, I was living out in University Heights, and I was at the Deadwood. I'm known as the Queen of the Deadwood. Been hanging out there for 10 years. Everybody loves me there. I'm at the Deadwood, and I feel threatened. And I never feel threatened in the Deadwood because they don't allow that to happen. I walk downtown, I get on the bus, I go home, and I'm walking down the street in front of my apartment complex, walking to my apartment, and I hear a car coming, making a lot of noise, and I look over my shoulder, and it's this old beater, and it's coming at a high rate of speed, and it's coming right at me. So I dove onto the grass, did a really neat tuck and roll, jumped up, because I was ready to run. And this guy sticks his head out the passenger window as the car keeps on going, and he goes, "Ah, we missed you this time, Sydney, but we're going to get you." If this just wasn't some clowns out having a good time, this was somebody that was trying to run me over. So again, and how these people get my phone number, I'd love to know. I'm getting hate messages, I'm getting hate mail slipped under my doorway. I got the University Heights cops patrolling outside my apartment all night long, trying to catch this guy, because he wanted to kill me. And for no other reason than, at the time I was dating a girl that worked at the Deadwood, and she was incredibly cute. And from what they told the cops after they got caught, was they saw me with my girlfriend, and they were offended by that. And they thought I deserved to die because of that. So, that they can't pass a law against. You know? You can't legislate hatred away. The only thing you can do is educate hatred away. Which is kind of what I'm doing here. Not that I think that any of you are capable of that kind of hatred, but you might know somebody who is.
As far as how they would get your, at least your address, there's one of the articles where they were...
Oh, no kidding.
Because that was kind enough to print your address.
Right? I go before the city council, and I give my thing, and then I gave an interview to a radio station afterwards, and then I talked to some other people, but I don't remember exactly who. And so, the next morning, 7:30 in the morning, there's a knock on my door, and it's some clown with the Cedar Rapids Gazette in his hand wanting to meet me. Because they printed both names, my now legal name, Cindy Burke, and Bob Nephew, and my address. And this guy wanted to go out on a date. I'm like, whoa. I ended up having to take
You think frat guys are bad.
Yeah, this guy, you know, he came straight from the Dewdrop Inn. He was kind of scary. But I did. I actually ended up taking my name off my mailbox so nobody knew what apartment I lived in because people were knocking on my door. And that was scary. Not as scary as having attempts on my life, but that was still, you know, should have known right then and there that this was not all the fun and games I expected it to be. That's about all I have on the amendment and my part of it. I'm real proud of what I did. I really am. I'm thinking that this... Oh, you got rid of that.
Okay.
The night that I went before the city council was the best moment of my life. In my prior life, I was an addict, big time addict, a big time alcoholic, and I was wasting my life.
I got it back up there.
And this is the greatest moment of my life. I had to get sober to get here. But I'm real proud of it. It's my, you know, and then they're teaching about me in a class at the University of Iowa. And I hope I'm not giving anything away by saying this. The fact that I was the wrong answer on your final exam last spring, I thought that was so appropriate because I've been the wrong answer all my life.
I'm not going to have the exact same question.
Those of you that are chronic note takers, don't write that down because it will be a different question. But, yeah, never mind.
Well, that's how. The student of mine who knows you had come up had mentioned the fact that she knows you before that. But, you know, it's kind of how we were kind of introduced to one another, at least indirectly. One of my students, I taught this last semester and talked about this specific time period in Iowa City's history, and a student came up to me after class and said, hey, you know, that Cindy Burke you were talking about, well, she live across the street from her?
No, we're just friends.
Just friends? Okay, I thought you said she was your neighbor or something, but yeah, but she knows you, yeah. And, so we kind of got pointed at one another and, you know, said you'd be more than
I heard that you thought that I was now no longer living in Iowa City.
Somehow or another, I think I had gotten that impression.
Unless you go to the Deadwood or knock on my door, you're not going to, you know, I mean, I don't get out a lot. I mean, I do. But I don't, you know, not where anybody would, like, I'm not hanging out on a corner anywhere or anything like that. I like, you know, my experience has been live my life to the fullest within the constraints that I have. You know, like, I'm not going to go to any bar in Oskaloosa anytime soon. And there's places where I feel comfortable and there's places I don't feel comfortable. And there's places I don't feel comfortable because, not because I'm a transsexual, just because I think, you know, like, and if I offend anybody, I'm sorry. Oh, I mean, like the Union Bar. You know, I've been there once. Walked in, used the bathroom, said to my friend, we're getting out of here. And she goes, well, we just paid a coverage amount. I don't care, we're getting out of here. There's nothing here for me. And we did, we left. And I've never been back. You know, you're not going to find me hanging out. I don't drink, so, you know. I hang out at the Deadwood, I drink Dr. Pepper. Every now and then we sneak out the back door and smoke a bowl in the alley.
You didn't hear that.
This would be a good time for my disclaimer. Anything I've said today in no way is the official position or policy of the University of Iowa or any employees there.
Particularly own. Dr. Pepper. Diet Coke, that's okay.
Yeah, they don't sell Dr. Pepper on campus, do they? Yeah. I
actually don't know. Do they?
No. I'm thinking Coke's got the whole thing tied up. And they're paying the university money to do it. So.
Yeah, that's probably true, unfortunately. But
so, you know,
even though I like Diet Coke,
those of us who don't like Coke, we're just, you know, like poor people that drink Pepsi. I guess if I should. Does anybody have any questions?
Was the guy in the car the same guy with the knife?
No, it's two different guys.
So the guy with the knife was.
The guy with the knife was late 95, early 96. The guy in the car was 2003.
Oh.
Yeah. And then there was another one that broke into my apartment and wrote like about a 15-page hate letter on my computer. That was kind of scary. The former police chief that we had here, I've known since I was a little kid. He was on the police force in the town we grew up in outside of Chicago, and was a good friend of my father's. And I called him up when I realized that this guy had been in my apartment, and he came over to my apartment and gave me a really nice 9mm pistol that I kept in my apartment to blow this guy away if he ever came in the door again. Because I had no clue how he got in. And I'm feeling really vulnerable, so he'd have come in when I was sleeping. He'd have gotten a nice surprise. Yes?
So when the guy with the knife came approached you, why did he just
defend
that you were transsexual, or
I don't know what his deal was. You know,
you didn't do anything to him.
People with big knives, you really don't stand around and talk about
them. Why did not you like seen them somewhere like out or?
No, late? You know what? And the thing about it is, I don't think I ever saw this guy's face. I really don't. I saw his shoes.
Well, I'm sure you were scared.
I saw his pants.
Yeah.
And I heard his voice. And I'll never forget that voice as long as I live. because, I mean, he's got this knife, and I mean, it had a blade on it that long, and it was about that wide. It was what they call a Bowie knife, and it's a big knife, and it was really sharp. I mean, I was bleeding just from him holding it up against my neck, and he said, don't turn around, don't say anything, don't yell, or I'll kill you, and then he proceeded to rape me, and then I threw up on his shoes. So he pushed me when he was done. He had a guy with him, and the other guy just didn't want to have nothing to do with any of it. And so he pushed me into the bush that I was standing in front of, and they took off. So I never really saw him.
You haven't heard from him since?
Like, no, not since. My guess is, and I got nowhere to prove this, my guess is that he's somewhere not too far from here still. He's just not talking about it, because he's not in any kind of shape to be talking about it. Because, I mean, if you'd have seen these women that told me I had nothing else to worry about, you know, led me to believe that something that he came to would not fun end, you know. And I feel guilty about it, you know. If somebody lost their life as a direct result of something that I did, it would really bother me. So I don't think about it a lot. I'm grateful that he's not bothering me anymore. I wish everybody would just kind of leave me alone. You know, because my life is, there are things that I get asked that nobody would ever get asked. And there are, I mean, like one night I'm sitting at the bar at the Deadwood talking to a friend of mine. A guy comes up, grabs my boob, and squeezes it really hard. Now, the hormones that I'm on, for some reason, about every 6 months, my boobs grow a little bit. And they get really tender when they do that. And this guy grabbed onto me, and I mean, I was crying. It hurt so bad. And he goes, are those real? Well, yeah. Well, I was just wondering. You know, and he didn't see anything wrong with grabbing my boob or asking me if they were real. You know, and I don't think a lot of people get that in their life. You know, and I don't see why people think that because I'm a transsexual that I don't deserve the same dignity and respect that other people do. You know, my favorite question is whether or not I have a penis. And I can tell who's going to ask it just because the first thing they say is, do you mind if I ask you something personal? And it's usually within 5 minutes of meeting them. Can I ask you something personal? And I know what they're going to say, but, you know, I'm polite. And am upbringing. So, I, you know, and they go, do you have a penis? And again, it's like, in what world that you live in is it okay to walk up to a complete stranger and ask a question like that? But that's the way it is. People, you know, they think they have a right to know every little detail of your life, and they really don't. And I'm really good at not answering that question. I can lead you along for 20 minutes and you think you're getting the answer, and you have a clue. Because I'm not going to tell you, because it's none of your damn business. Anybody else?
I think there might actually have been one or two other questions, but we're coming up towards the end of the hour, which is the 59th edition of I'd Rather Be a Trans Flake Than a Trans Fake. Thank you for tuning in, and I'm sure Cindy Burke, thank you for tuning in. As you probably heard, you know, she was someone who wasn't setting out to do anything big. She just wanted to live her life, and fortunately there was a roadblock, and she did something about it. And one of several people who, you know, got together and came together and changed the way things were in, you know, relatively small town, Iowa City, Iowa. She spoke to my other section that day, too. I might be able to edit that one together into another show. She talked about a few different things. But nevertheless, I hope everybody enjoyed that. Thank you for tuning in, as always. In addition, you know, being on Trans FM, it is podcasted now. I know it's on Podomatic and iTunes, maybe elsewhere. But As always, thank you for tuning in. I am Katrina Rose, and this is the Trans FM Radio Network, among other things. See you next time.